Chapter 1. Taisy. If I hadn't been alone in the house, if it hadn't been early morning, with that specific kind of fuzzy early morning quiet and a sky the color of moonstones and raspberry jam outside my kitchen window, if I had gotten further than two sips into my bowl-sized mug of coffee, if he himself hadn't called, but had sent the message via one of his usual minions, if his voice had been his voice, and not a dried-up, flimsy paring off the big golden apple of his baritone, if he hadn't said, please, if it had been a different hour and a different day entirely, maybe, just maybe, I would have turned him down. Fat chance. He caught me at a vulnerable moment, that's true enough. But the fact is that in all my life, I have loved just three men. One of them was only a boy, so he might not even count. The other was my twin brother Marcus. The third was Wilson Cleary, professor, inventor, philanderer, self-made but reluctant millionaire, brilliant man, breathtaking jerk. My father. 2 weeks before Wilson called me, he'd undergone a massive myocardial infarction and subsequent quadruple bypass. The irony of this turn of events was so obvious that I didn't need Marcus to point it out to me, but of course he did, with a frequency and satisfaction that was in very poor taste, even if Wilson deserved it. Marcus made bad heart jokes. Lots of them. After we got word that Wilson had emerged from the surgery more or less intact, I made them too. Even my mother, whose animosity toward her ex-husband had, as far as I could tell, evaporated years ago, lifted one curled corner of her mouth and said sweetly, "Well, now at least we know he has one." At Wilson's request, a request conveyed to my mother in an email through Wilson's lawyer, a woman named Elsbeth Bing, with whom Marcus swears Wilson had an affair back when we were 10. We had not visited him, neither in the hospital nor at his home after he was released. I was outwardly relieved, but inwardly a little bruised by this. When I said something to this effect to Marcus, whom I was visiting when we got the news, he knocked gently on my head with his fist in a gesture that meant, "Is anybody in there?" and said, "Reminder. We haven't visited the dude in over 15 years. Haven't visited him at his request. Not that I'd go anyway." "Still," I protested, "he might have been on his deathbed." And then I quickly added, "And don't say no such luck." Marcus grinned and pointedly said nothing at all. It was true. 17 years ago, in a frenzy of disgust and impatience, Wilson had ditched us, my mother, Marcus and me, kicked us to the curb. With neck-breaking speed, we went from being his family to being a collection of acquaintances, three people he barely knew and almost never saw. Marcus and I had just turned 18. Even before this rupture, before he became a spectacularly terrible father, he had been a garden variety bad one. Before he was absent, cold, disapproving, distant, a workaholic, all the usual bad father garbage. Since the day he told us he was finished with us, the day my mother told him to take his house and shove it, then packed us up and moved us to the North Carolina town in which she'd grown up, determined to be the leaver rather than the one who was left, we had seen him a handful of times, but had visited him exactly once on his daughter's first birthday. The real, new and improved, clean slate, second time's a charm daughter, Willow. Don't go thinking that I wasn't angry about all this. I was. In fact, I would say that I was at least as angry as Marcus, whose anger stayed red hot for years before it cooled to something hard and shiny and black. It's just that without wanting to or trying to, and for years I was deliberately trying not to, I held on to love. Or it held on to me. Not active love, not love the verb form. It was more just there, a small, unshakable thing, left over, useless, as vestigial as wisdom teeth or a tailbone, but still potent enough so that when I heard his voice on the phone, my heart gave a tiny jump of hope that made me want to slap it.